Okay, imagine this. You're standing right there, a fork on the road in China. To your left, the path stretches north. You're thinking ancient capitals, maybe dusty plains, that crisp traditional air, imperial history, Beijing opera, maybe the smell of dumplings.
Yeah, you can almost picture it.
And then to your right, the path winds south. Totally different vibe. Glittering skylines, lush green landscapes, that constant hum of innovation. Think global business, tech hubs, maybe dim sum.
Big contrast.
Huge. And your goal, your only goal, is to master Mandarin. But looking at these two paths, I mean, how do you choose? Which one is right for you?
That feeling is so common, isn't it? You've got the goal clear, but the how is, well, it's complicated. A lot of learners hit that exact point.
Absolutely. And it's precisely this dilemma that one of our listeners brought up. They're a keen learner, like many of you listening, just trying to sift through all the info out there.
Information overload is real.
Totally. And they shared this guide that tackles this exact question. Where should you study Chinese in China, North versus South?
It's a question people grab onto, but maybe sometimes for the surface reasons first. The guide they sent goes way, way deeper than just the obvious stuff.
Right. So that's our mission today. We're going to unpack this guide together. We'll dig into what it found, pull out the really crucial bits, and help you figure out what truly matters for your decision.
Yeah, moving beyond those simple assumptions, like, oh, it's just about the accent.
Exactly. We want to get into the layers, how this choice really shapes your whole learning journey based on what the source material is telling us for, say, 2025 study plans.
And we'll see what factors this guide says are the real drivers for success. There might be some surprises.
Okay, let's dive in.
Yeah.
The guide kicks off by setting the stage, saying right away this is about, well, a lot more than just location.
Yeah, it hits you immediately. The source really hammers home that picking north or south isn't just like a small preference. It shapes everything.
Everything.
Language exposure, definitely, but also cultural immersion, your day-to-day life, the climate you're dealing with, even your future career prospects, it's all tied together.
So it's framing it as this foundational choice, not just a point on a map. And this guide is meant to be pretty comprehensive looking at all these angles.
And what's interesting is how it jumps right into the thing everyone talks about first, the elephant in the room, or maybe the erhwa in the room.
Ah, yeah, the core linguistic divide, pronunciation and the language environment. That's usually the starting point, isn't it?
It is. And the guide gives it proper attention because, look, it is significant. It paints northern China as kind of the heartland of standard Mandarin pronunciation.
So places like Beijing, Harbin,
Yeah,
that kind of area.
exactly. That's where you're most likely to hear those clear retroflex sounds, the ZH, SH, SH,
The
R.
ones that can be tricky to master.
Right. And people there tend to make a clear distinction between similar sounds like N versus ng or Z versus yish. And of course, that classic air sound, erhua, which you see in textbooks. It's pretty common in speech.
The guide actually has this great quote from MJ, an advanced student. He'd studied in both Shanghai and Beijing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. What did he say again?
He said, "After studying in both Shanghai and Beijing, I can definitively say that learning Mandarin in Beijing gave me a much stronger foundation in standard pronunciation. Even taxi drivers spoke clearer Mandarin than some of my teachers in the South. The immersive northern environment accelerated my speaking progress tremendously."
Wow, that's quite a statement. But it really backs up the guide's point about the consistent exposure you get in the north to the Beijing dialect-based standard.
Okay, so North equals strong standard pronunciation environment.
Got it. What about the south then? Is it just fuzzier,
Yeah.
less clear?
The guide doesn't really frame it as less clear. It talks about the South having a diverse linguistic landscape.
Yeah.
Mandarin is definitely spoken, obviously, but it exists alongside major regional dialects.
Like Cantonese or Wu in Shanghai, Min in Fujian. Exactly. And that mix influences the Mandarin you hear. The source mentions that regional accents often subtly color the local Mandarin, maybe softer consonants, tones that aren't quite textbook standard. You'll hear fewer sounds for sure.
And code switching, people mixing Mandarin and dialects.
Oh, definitely. That's pretty common in social settings.
Yeah.
So you're getting Mandarin, yes, but it's embedded in this richer, more complex language soup, you could say.
The guide contrasts the standard reinforcing North with the linguistically diverse South. That's a good way to put it.
It is.
So, what does the source see as the actual learning advantages for each side?
Well, for the North, the advantage is pretty straightforward. You're constantly hearing and hopefully reinforcing standard pronunciation. It makes nailing down tones and accent maybe a bit easier, less interference from other dialects.
Probably good for HSK prep too, aligning with the test standard.
Exactly. It aligns very well with those standardized tests. You're hearing the textbook sounds all around you.
Okay, and the South's advantage.
The South is presented as fantastic for developing really adaptable listening skills. You get exposed day in and day out to the fact that Mandarin isn't monolithic. People speak it differently.
Which is reality,
It's
right?
total reality. So it prepares you better for understanding people from various regions, not just Beijingers. Plus, you get exposure to China's incredible linguistic variety, maybe even a chance to pick up some of another dialect. The source suggests this actually boosts your overall language awareness.
Adaptable listening. It feels super practical for, actually talking to people everywhere.
It really does. And this leads to a really clever, actionable tip the guide offers. It's about optimizing your learning wherever you end up.
Ooh, okay. What's the tip?
The guide suggests that if you're studying in the South, you should make a point to actively listen to standard Mandarin media news broadcasts, maybe podcasts, TV shows. Get that pure input regularly.
Supplement your environment.
Exactly. And conversely, if you're in the North, you should actively seek out media featuring different regional accents. Watch shows from Shanghai, listen to music from Guangzhou. Build those versatile listening skills needed outside the Beijing bubble.
Ah, that's smart. It's not passive learning. It's about actively curating your input. I like that.
It reframes the whole thing, doesn't it? It's less where's the perfect accent and more how do I make this place work best for my specific goals?
Okay, pronunciation differences noted, strategies noted. But now we get to the part the guide really leans into, the kind of plot twist.
Yes, this is where it gets really interesting. The source basically says, okay, pronunciation matters, but
What?
if you only focus on that, you're missing huge parts of the picture. It argues strongly that other factors can be just as important, maybe even more important, depending on you.
That's the reversal. The thing you thought was number one might actually be number three or four on your personal list.
Precisely. And the guide lays out these other big interconnected factors: culture, climate, cost, and career. These aren't just side notes, they're woven into the fabric of your experience and really impact how effectively you learn.
Okay, let's unpack those then.
Yeah.
Starting with the actual learning environment itself, the schools, the teaching styles.
Right. The source points out some general differences in educational approaches. Northern institutions, especially the big famous ones, often have this long-established tradition of teaching Chinese to foreigners.
Like BLCU, Beijing Language and Culture University, the guide called it the Mandarin Mecca, and Peking University, Tsinghua.
Exactly. Their curricula often have a very comprehensive focus on standard pronunciation, using, let's say, more traditional teaching methods, lots of grammar drills, character memorization, focus on tones in a very structured way, often a more formal classroom vibe.
The source also mentioned private schools in the north, like Mandarin Zone in Beijing, leveraging that strong standard pronunciation environment too.
Yes, they fit into that ecosystem. Now, southern programs are often described in the guide as potentially more maybe innovative or practical in their approach.
How so?
Well, you might find more courses specifically geared towards business Chinese. A heavier emphasis, maybe earlier on, practical communication skills. Sometimes more integration of technology, maybe more flexible teaching methods that blend Chinese and Western ideas. The focus can often feel tilted towards conversational fluency.
And the guide mentions schools like Fudan University or Mandarin House in Shanghai
Yeah.
or Keats down in Kunming as examples there.
Right. And here's another key insight moment from the source that really challenges that simple north-south location thinking. It quotes a student, Sarah Liu, who studied business Chinese at Keats in Kunming.
What did she say?
She said, "The teaching approach matters more than location. I chose a small Mandarin program in Kunming over a prestigious Beijing university because the teaching methodology matched my learning style. The one-on-one attention accelerated my Chinese progress far more than the prestige of the institution would have."
Wow. Okay, that directly pushes back on the idea that just being in Beijing automatically means better learning. Finding the right school fit could be the bigger
Yeah,
factor.
it really shifts the focus, doesn't it? And the guide backs this up with tables comparing different types of schools, specialized language schools, elite universities, private centers, immersive programs showing that variety exists everywhere. You have to research the specific school, not just the city.
Okay, good point. Now, Stepping outside the classroom, cultural immersion, how does location shape that?
Massively. According to the source, North and South offer very different cultural flavors. Northern culture is presented as this deep dive into traditional China.
Right. You've got direct access to imperial history, the Forbidden City, Summer Palace, wandering old hutongs, classical arts like Beijing Opera, and the food, dumplings, noodles, that heartier wheat-based cuisine.
Exactly. The guide suggests social interactions might feel a bit more formal, more rooted in tradition. It argues this environment is unparalleled for really getting a grasp on China's long history, its philosophy, and naturally you pick up vocabulary related to all that.
There's that quote. There is absolutely no rival for Chinese history and culture than the capital itself, Beijing. The city oozes ancient China.
Yeah, it's pretty evocative. Now, contrast that with Southern culture. The guide describes it as more of a dynamic mosaic. You've got distinct regional cultures, Cantonese, Wu, Hakka, etc., mixing with strong international vibes and rapid modernization.
So places like Shanghai or Shenzhen, where you see ancient temples next to super tall skyscrapers.
Precisely. The food shifts to rice, seafood, more diverse regional styles. Socially, the source suggests it can feel a bit more relaxed, more informal maybe. And there's this undeniable focus on business, trade, economic energy.
Which is great if you're interested in business Chinese or understanding modern China.
Invaluable. The guide gives a great example with Emma Wilson in Chengdu. Remember that?
Yeah, the tea houses.
Exactly. She talked about how Chengdu's tea house culture wasn't just relaxing. It provided constant natural settings for practice. She says she learned colloquial expressions and cultural nuances that no textbook could teach.
That highlights how the specific city's culture, not just North-South broadly, creates unique learning opportunities. It's about living it.
Absolutely. It's not just sightseeing. It's the daily interactions.
Mm-hmm.
So your choice is kind of between being steeped in imperial history or immersed in modern global dynamism. Both valid ways to understand China, but very different experiences.
Okay, next factor. Climate. Seems trivial, maybe, but it affects daily life, comfort, maybe even study habits.
The source definitely treats it as significant. Northern China, continental climate, big swings. Winters are cold, seriously cold and dry. Beijing averages around minus 4 Celsius, that's 24 Fahrenheit, in January. Summers are hot, but usually less humid than the south.
But, and this is key according to the guide, the north generally has central heating in winter.
Crucial point. Which makes studying indoors quite comfortable, even cozy, during those long cold months. The guide suggests this might even lead to more focused, intensive indoor study periods. You also get spring dust storms sometimes, but autumn is often gorgeous.
In the south?
Subtropical. Winters are much milder. Shanghai around 4 Celsius, Guangzhou a balmy 14 Celsius on average, but the summers, hot and humid. Often over 30 Celsius, 86 Fahrenheit, plus monsoon rains. High humidity is a factor pretty much year-round.
And the flip side of the heating coin, the guide emphasizes the widespread lack of central heating in many southern buildings, especially older ones.
Right. So even if it's not freezing outside, indoors can feel quite chilly and damp in winter, which some people find really affects their comfort and concentration. The trade-off is you get year-round greenery and maybe more opportunities for outdoor activities consistently.
So north. Brace for cold, but cozy indoors for study. South, milder winters, but potentially damp indoors. And sticky summers. The guide flags Kunming, again, the city of eternal spring, as that ideal weather outlier. Definitely makes you think about your personal tolerance.
Which leads perfectly into maybe the most practical factor for a lot of learners, living costs.
Yes, the bottom line. And this is where the source, I think, delivers its most clarifying, maybe even surprising insight.
I completely agree. It demolishes a common assumption. The guide states it very clearly. The main thing determining your living costs is the city's economic tier, its development level, not simply whether it's in the north or south.
So it's not automatically north is cheap, south is expensive, or vice versa.
Nope. It's big, wealthy tier one city is expensive. Smaller, less developed tier two or three city is more affordable. And that applies whether it's Beijing or Shanghai versus, say, Chengdu or Dalian.
That is genuinely a game changer for planning and budgeting.
Huge. The source gives some ballpark figures. Housing is the big one. Tier 1 cities like Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Shenzhen expect high rents, maybe 3,000 to 9,000 yuan or even more per month for a single room off campus.
Wow.
But tier 2 or 3 cities, that can drop significantly, maybe 1,500 to 4,000 yuan. And university dorms are almost always the cheapest option, maybe 800 to 2,000. Big difference.
Food is generally affordable for local options everywhere, right? but utilities differ.
Yeah, local food is usually cheap. Utilities vary. North might have heating costs factored in or separate. South, you'll definitely be paying for air conditioning in summer, maybe running a dehumidifier too.
And the source uses this amazing example to show how cost isn't just about saving money, it directly impacts learning. The quote from Alex Patterson.
Oh, the guy who moved from Beijing to Chengdu.
Yes. He said, with the same budget, I was able to extend my Chinese language program from 6 months to a full year, take private tutoring sessions twice weekly, and still have money for weekend travel. The cost difference transformed my entire Mandarin learning experience.
That's incredible, isn't it? Just by moving to a cheaper city, he effectively doubled his study time and added personalized tutoring.
It shows choosing a more affordable city isn't necessarily a step down. It can be a strategic move to enhance your learning resources.
Absolutely. The guide even suggests that strategy. Maybe base yourself in a budget-friendly Tier 2 city for your main studies, but plan weekend trips to nearby Tier 1 cities to get that big city experience sometimes.
Best of both worlds, potentially. Smart.
Okay, last major factor the guide covers, career opportunities. Looking ahead, your study location can definitely influence the kinds of professional networks and opportunities you encounter.
How does the guide break that down between North and South?
Studying in the North, especially Beijing, naturally positions you better for careers related to government, diplomacy, education, cultural institutions, maybe traditional state-owned enterprises. The whole environment emphasizes formal Mandarin, understanding hierarchy, building connections, Guangxi.
Makes sense, being the political and cultural capital.
Exactly. Whereas southern China, with its economic powerhouses like Shanghai, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, is more aligned with international trade, technology, finance, innovation, multinational companies, logistics, creative fields.
So the emphasis there might be more on business Chinese adaptability.
Yes. And the guide suggests a culture that tends to be maybe more focused on meritocracy, results, and navigating the global marketplace. So your location can help you start building the specific language skills and, just as importantly, the network relevant to your future industry.
Another really important layer to consider.
Definitely.
Okay, wow. We've covered language, schools, culture, climate, cost, and career. That paints a really full picture. The guide then ties this all together by looking at specific cities, yeah.
It does. It synthesizes all these factors to give you a clearer sense of which cities might be a good fit for different types of learners based on their priorities.
What were some of the highlights it pulled out?
Well, Beijing, unsurprisingly, gets highlighted for those really focused on perfecting standard pronunciation, people passionate about deep cultural history, or those on an academic track. Shanghai is presented as the go-to for business Chinese, international networking, and experiencing that super modern, dynamic side of China.
And Harbin?
Great for standard pronunciation, real immersion, often more budget-friendly than Beijing, but yeah, you need to be okay with serious cold.
Like really okay with cold.
Understatement of the year. Then Kunming gets praised for its amazing climate, truly the city of eternal spring, and affordability, making it potentially great for longer-term comfortable study.
Shenzhen.
That's flagged for the tech-focused, entrepreneurs, anyone wanting to be at the cutting edge of China's development. And Chengdu sounds lovely, described as offering a more balanced lifestyle, incredible food, that famous relaxed tea house culture promoting interaction.
The guide really drives home that personal fit matters most, right?
Mm.
You'd even shared that quote from James Taylor, who chose Dalian.
Yeah, that was a great example. He found standard Mandarin there. It was affordable. And crucially for him, there were fewer foreigners, meaning he had to use Chinese constantly. That forced immersion made it the perfect place for him, even though Dalian isn't always top of the typical lists.
That perfectly sums up the source's main point, doesn't it? The best city is an objective. It's the one that meshes best with your specific needs, goals, and preferences.
Exactly. Which leads the guide logically into the next steps, the practical planning phase, once you've weighed these factors and started leaning towards certain options.
Things like really researching specific schools, trying to connect with alumni or current students, sorting out the visa stuff, finding online communities, making a detailed budget, packing for the climate.
Then setting clear goals.
Yeah.
And the source includes another great quote here from Rachel Kim about being intentional about your language environment. She actually combined experiences.
Oh, right. She started in Beijing and then moved.
Yeah. She said, I started in Beijing for pronunciation, then moved to Chengdu for a more relaxed pace and deeper cultural experience. This combination gave me both technical accuracy and practical fluency that I couldn't have achieved in just one location.
Now, that is a fascinating strategy. It flips the script from either to maybe a boat hand approach over time?
It opens up a really interesting possibility for learners, doesn't it? A longer-term phased approach.
It really does. So let's bring it back to where we started at Crossroads.
Yeah.
After unpacking this guide, you see the path you choose. It's not just about how your Mandarin ends up sounding.
Not at all.
It's about the air you'll breathe, literally, the culture you'll live and navigate, the weather you'll adapt to, the budget you'll manage, and maybe even the career doors that start to open.
We've pulled out the core insights from this source material, and the big takeaway is that this decision is complex, it's multifaceted, and it's deeply, deeply personal. There's no single best place.
Only the best place for you. Tailored to your unique mix of language aims, cultural curiosities, climate tolerance, financial reality, and future dreams.
Exactly.
And, you know, this deep dive into the source leaves us with a really interesting final thought to chew on. Given all this diversity across China that the guide highlights, could it be that for some learners, the truly most effective path actually involves experiencing multiple regions?
Like Rachel Kim did.
Yeah. Maybe starting somewhere for foundational pronunciation, then moving somewhere else for different cultural immersion or specific industry exposure. What would your ideal multi-city learning adventure look like?
That's a great question for everyone listening to consider as they map out their own journey.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material today.